Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. Our guest this week is Kathy Burns, the president and CEO of the International Fresh Produce Association, who joins us to discuss the group's MAHA report recommendations, ag labor reform, and trade. But first, here's this week's headlines. The Agriculture Department projected a bin-busting corn harvest this week that could boost subsidy payments for farmers. In its first forecast of the season based on a survey of farms, USDA estimated farmers will produce a record 16.7 billion bushels of corn this fall. That includes an average corn yield at a record 188.8 bushels per acre, an increase of 9.5 bushels over last year's crop. However, the report estimated a 30-cent lower season average price for this year's corn crop at $3.90 per bushel. That could trigger significantly higher commodity program payments. Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Lee Zeldin urged machinery manufacturers this week to update their equipment to prevent shutdowns when diesel exhaust fluid runs out. At the Iowa State Fair, Zeldin announced the new guidance will press equipment manufacturers to ensure vehicles already in use can receive software changes to prevent sudden and severe power loss from the lack of diesel exhaust fluid. EPA regulations already require that new diesel on-road trucks must be engineered to avoid power loss caused by a lack of diesel exhaust fluid. The public will have to wait even longer for the release of the second Make America Healthy Again Commission report to be released. The White House confirmed this week that the Make Our Children Healthy Again strategy report was on track to be submitted to the president on August 12th. However, the public will have to wait until the schedules of the president and the various cabinet members who are part of the commission can be coordinated for an official announcement, according to a White House spokesperson. The commission's recommendations are expected to push for changes in food industry practices and also inform the coming version of the Dietary Guidelines for Americans. Farm groups complained the initial MAHA report released in May was overly critical of pesticides and seed oils and ignored science demonstrating their safety. Kathy Burns is president and CEO of the International Fresh Produce Association. With the public awaiting the release of the second Make America Healthy Again Commission report, we asked her about IFPA's recommendations and how those have changed since the first report was released.
If you think about Make America Healthy Again, I mean, we are like at the pinnacle of that, right? If you think about the impact of fruits and vegetables. So we know that Americans cannot be healthy without consuming fruits and vegetables. So health improves when produce consumption increases. It's foundational to everything we do. So the real important part is to increase access, affordability, and intake of fruits and vegetables. And we're hoping and expecting, quite frankly, that's what the report says. We have been advocating for that since the first report came out, in terms of making sure that when we talk about whole foods, that we're talking about fresh fruits and vegetables and increasing the consumption of those. We have submitted, actually all the way back in March, we submitted 8 recommendations. We've now increased that to 10 recommendations to the MAHA caucus for consideration. So I'll just cover off on a couple of them. One is we recommend making fruit and vegetables a healthcare benefit. So specifically putting produce prescriptions in Medicare, Medicaid, and VA, Medicare, Medicaid, and VA healthcare as a covered benefit. The other thing that we have recommended is we have a very successful fresh fruit and vegetable program in schools. Not all elementary schools are covered. It is our recommendation to have all elementary schools covered and increase that ultimately to include middle and high schools. And the last one that has certainly been in the news over the last 9 months is around SNAP. We understand push for SNAP restrictions, but our recommendation is actually to have SNAP incentives specifically around consumption of fruits and vegetables. So incentives versus restrictions, or incentives and restrictions, but we believe that could be a game changer for Americans' health.
And another, when we look at, you know, your suggestions for that first report versus the second, I saw in the addition to your recommendations, crop protection tools get added. Can you kind of elaborate on that one as well?
We definitely added two associated with, actually we added crop insurance and the regenerative agriculture as well. Specifically as it relates to crop insurance, I mean, our farmers, our growers need tools in order to successfully produce their products. And you take those tools away, we're going to continue to see the depletion of American farms across this country. So we obviously, all our recommendations are safe and science-based, and we thought it was really important for the produce industry in particular to weigh in on that as well.
And you began to mention, but another tenet of the MAHA movement has been the push to get states to stop SNAP recipients from, purchasing junk food, candy, soda, things of that nature. But you guys actually have an opportunity with SNAP Choice. Can you elaborate a little bit more, a little bit more on that?
Yeah, I mean, our ingoing philosophy is just because you restrict junk food doesn't mean people are going to buy fruits and vegetables. They may buy the next worst thing for them. Certainly understand the administration's orientation towards that, but as IFPA representing the fresh produce and floral industry in particular, we believe incentives, and we have data to show that when people consume more fruits and vegetables, they actually do get healthier. We have it with produce prescriptions, we have it with FFVP. We have it with GusNip. So we have just behavior over years showing that Americans get healthier when they eat more fruits and vegetables. So why don't we incent people to buy more fruits and vegetables as opposed to just restrictions?
We'll be back with more newsmakers right after this.
These are the farmers and ranchers who help build the America we depend on, and Farm Credit is here for them, supporting rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services. In good times and bad, we provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural home buyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. We help agricultural producers feed the world. Learn more today.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you
Yes.
asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. Raids of agricultural businesses have occurred across the country. We asked Kathy Burns, the president and CEO of the International Fresh Produce Association, why those raids are concerning for both the agriculture and food industries.
It's no secret we have a broken labor system, and it really is a threat to the U.S. economy. So 50% of fresh produce expenses are labor. In some cases, farmers are investing their entire paycheck in labor. An example is a single bin of apples a decade ago cost $84 to produce. Now it's $191. That's over one decade. So what we need is obviously meaningful reform, because if not, we're going to have fewer American fresh fruits and vegetables on store shelves. And we're going to continue to see farms go out of business. We're already seeing it, actually. If you look at fresh fruit inputs or imports, from 2007 to 2021, we were importing 50% of our fruit. We're now at 60% of our fruit. And for vegetables, we were at 20%, and now we're up to 38%. So it's urgent. The call is urgent. In the first place, let's address the H-2A reform, specifically AWAR, and the opportunity to expand H-2A programs to all growers, not just seasonal growers. That's literally job one. The Trump administration actually has shown a great willingness to work with us. Secretary Brooke Rollins and Secretary Laura Chavez-Dreamer have worked to decrease the efficiencies and really are listening to the industry. But only Congress has the power to really attack and pass comprehensive immigration reform. So the longer they wait, the more American farms will end up disappearing.
And Kathy, grocery prices have modestly declined, but analysis from FMI, the Food Industry Association, suggests that tariffs could still raise prices again. Are you concerned about fresh produce prices rising because of tariff increases?
Yes, I think there are real consequences for what's happening as it relates to the impact of tariffs, both in terms of cost and affordability. What has shifted over the years is consumers expect year-round availability of our products. So think about crops like berries or peppers or avocados or tropicals, commodities that we can't grow year round here domestically. And so in those seasonal gaps, we need to have access to those products. I would expect to see higher prices on fresh fruits and vegetables. I would expect to see them in the winter and the early spring when U.S. production is somewhat limited. Forecasts are showing it could be as high as 5%. For the fresh produce industry, where overall grocery is around 2.6%. In fact, Yale Budget Lab just came out with a report that overall food prices may increase 3.2% in the long run, in the short term, and 2.9% in the long run. And if you think about bananas and pineapples, coconuts, tropicals, things that we don't grow here in the U.S., just makes it challenging when you put tariffs on those. And ultimately, those costs do need to be passed on to the consumer, which ultimately raises the prices for consumer. Our bigger concern is the impact that that could have on consumption as those prices continue to raise. It's not just on the product, though. Obviously, farms, it extends beyond the product. If we look at fertilizer, you know, input costs like fertilizer or packaging. So you're putting costs on top of costs. And at the end of the day, IFPA is expected from its members to drive the consumption of fresh fruits and vegetables, or reducing barriers to do so. So right now, our efforts are really on the reduction of the barriers to do so. So we've asked the Trump administration for three things. One, protecting USMCA, which they have done, and we certainly appreciate that. But now we need our neighbors, both Mexico and Canada, to also protect USMCA and the tenets of that. Secondly, we have asked for full exemption of our products. And this is exemption of our products for imports coming into the U.S., but also exports into countries like the EU and Canada. And then lastly, we encourage both the administration and other countries' governments to come to the tables to negotiate and try to get us out of the situation that we're in right now with some of these tariffs.
We'll be back with more AgriPulse newsmakers. But first, Allie Herring looks at this year's record-breaking projected corn harvest and what this means for farmers in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
USDA is projecting corn production in the U.S. this fall to reach nearly 17 billion bushels, a record high. The department also is estimating the average corn yield in 2025 at a record-breaking 188.8 bushels per acre. This larger harvest is predicted to make corn stocks rise to just over 2 billion bushels, the largest supply since the 2018 to 2019 marketing year. Meanwhile, USDA has also lowered its forecast for the average price for this year's crop, dropping 30 cents to $3.90 per bushel. The estimated average price for the 2024 corn crop is $4.30. Should these estimates be realized, the combination of a large corn harvest and falling prices could trigger significantly higher commodity program payments for corn farmers across the country. For AgriPulse, I'm Allie Herring.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Clean Fuels Alliance America is leading the way toward cleaner air, stronger local economies, and reduced dependence on fossil fuels. The industry uses more than 1 billion pounds of soybean oil every month to produce clean fuels. Biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel deliver immediate reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in heavy-duty transportation industries. We're growing better, cleaner fuels for today and tomorrow.
Welcome back. Dozens of U.S. trading partners are seeing higher tariffs after President Trump's August 1st negotiating deadline passed, and USDA has now projected a record corn crop this fall. We're joined by Dan Bossi from Ag Resource Company and Becky Rastall from the International Dairy Foods Association on our panel today. I want to begin with USDA's report, Dan, that says farmers will produce a record 16.7 billion bushels of corn this fall. What were your takeaways from that report?
It's wow. I mean, it's quite a report. I mean, when you look at a U.S. corn yield at a record 188.8, and then they found an additional 2 million acres, you put it all together, and we have a corn crop that's bigger this year than total supplies of the United States last year, including carry-in. So we've got a mountain of corn coming. I'm sure when we look at storage capacity for the Midwest, should this number, this yield number be right, we are going to be strained. We're going to be looking at 92% of U.S. storage capacity being utilized. So for the farmer, it means, unfortunately, lower prices, very weak cash basis levels, if you're a grain farmer. But if you're a livestock farmer, it means opportunity because there's going to be some very cheap feed grains as we look over the next 9 to 12 months.
Very large global stockpiles as well. And how are tariffs and those uncertainties about exports to China and elsewhere, affecting commodity markets as a whole right now?
Well, as I think about the trade aspect of things, I keep watching every week for the arrival of China as being a soybean buyer. This is the week that China normally steps forward. In the last couple of years, China stepped forward as being a significant buyer right after the USDA crop report. So if they don't do it this year, I think it's very telling. So far, we have zero sales in the books to China, our biggest export customer for soybeans. I'm hearing, at least from my contacts, whether it's in Asia or the United States, that China's not even calling right now asking for price offers, and that bothers me. In fact, some of the Chinese clients would tell me that the Chinese have been told not to buy U.S. soybeans. So right now they're buying in South America. They bought about 6.5 million metric tons from Brazil for October. That's the heart of our export program. And they're now trying to buy cargoes for November. So whether China's posturing for trade negotiations and wanting to use U.S. purchases as leverage or the lack thereof will be interesting to watch. But I'm becoming more and more concerned that China's a no-show in the U.S. export scene, at least for soybeans, a key ingredient for the U.S. farmer as we head into harvest.
And Becky, I want to bring you into the conversation as well. Dozens of U.S. trading partners were hit with higher tariffs after President Trump's August 1st negotiating deadline passed. You know, with your previous roles negotiating the China Phase 1 deal and, the China Phase 1 agreement and USMCA, you know, how do you see this round of trade negotiations being different? And, you know, what's your view of the trade landscape right now?
Yeah, you know, this is a really unique period that we're in. Typically in the past, you would have had full agreement negotiations with multiple chapters, a full suite of colleagues from across the agencies, all backgrounds of government coming together, negotiating every topic in tandem. And so to have these really shortened agreements that are under tremendous time pressures and also shortened in scope and not a full set of obligations is just a very unusual time. Not really comparable to anything in the past, in my opinion, even not comparable to China Phase 1, which was pretty comprehensive as agreements with China go.
We'll be back with more of our panel discussion right after this.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back. Canada and Mexico are two of the top trading partners for U.S. dairy products. With the discussion about tariffs, we asked Becky Rastall from the International Dairy Foods Association what the dairy sector's priorities will be in renegotiating the USMCA trade agreement.
Yeah, you know, I think we haven't been quiet that we feel the obligations that Canada committed to at the start of USMCA haven't really worked for dairy. That was a concern over the course of the renegotiation of NAFTA, specifically Canada's TRQ administration and their pricing of dairy products. So we had quite a lot of provisions for both in USMCA. We considered that a win at the time. And unfortunately, I think in both areas, we feel like Canada really has subverted the intent of the obligations and not really followed them. So for us, that's a key priority in any renegotiation prospect moving forward.
And Dan, I'm curious, farm country started off the year worried about new trade wars. Are farmers, do you think, better off or worse off with the trade negotiations that the president has made so far?
Well, it's hard to say yet. We don't know. I mean, I'm a little bothered that these trade negotiations have been broad. They've not been specific except for maybe like wheat to Bangladesh or something like that. So as we look forward, you know, I do believe there's going to have to be a measure of accountability. As we sit today, these agreements not being put on paper is something, as an analyst, that I think about. I just kind of shake my head at the billions that are involved. That being said, though, let's hope that everything does come together. But it's still too early to make a consensus as an economist saying that these trade agreements have been good or bad. We'll know that in the next 6 to 9 months. But here today, it's just too early. We've only got one from the UK that maybe is focused on ethanol. But that will take some time, I believe, to get some shipments on the books. But everything else, we're waiting for China. I think China's the big gorilla in the room, and whatever happens with it after this extension now, 90-day extension, will be very key longer term. I'm watching China. That's a key ingredient here.
And Becky, you want to get your thoughts on that as well? I mean, do you believe that farmers are better off or worse off with the trade deals that we've seen so far?
You know, I mean, I don't disagree with Dan's assessment, but I also think, you know, coming out of 4 years of no new negotiations or agreements to speak of, it's certainly better to have something to be talking about and working towards. As you know, dairy is an export dependent commodity in the United States. We export about 18% of what we produce, and we can't consume it all. That's a similar story to a lot of U.S. agriculture. So we need more competitive terms for our exports worldwide. And this is the best chance we've had to achieve that in the past several years. So we're optimistic, but it is still pretty early to tell, as all of these negotiations are pretty much still pending.
And as we wrap up here, Becky, I want to get your thoughts on the foreign shipbuilding port fees that will go into effect this fall. I mean, how could that impact the ag and dairy sectors? And could there be any exemptions for agriculture?
I understand the administration's objective. I think a lot of us in agriculture do. We certainly understand the desire to reshore some of our manufacturing sectors in the United States. But, you know, that's a process that takes time. And I think this administration's done a good job of trying to take agriculture's concerns into account. Like, you saw them revise their initial proposal to exempt certain bulk shipments. But, you know, there's a lot of agriculture that does ship in containerized form, not the least of which is dairy. And so we're pretty concerned. This is something where we would be likely to see carriers pass on fees to shippers, and there would be no real way to stop that. I mean, that's that kind of behavior in COVID era is why we had the Ocean Shipping Reform Act come about, to create transparency of billing and accountability for billing practices. And in a certain respect, I think this puts us a little bit back to where we started with those kinds of practices. So there's a lot of ways to deal with that, you know, especially as we think about agriculture needing to be exported. Maybe there's a discount available for any China-built or China-registered ships that do take U.S. agricultural exports upon departure or something like that. There's a lot of ways to sort of brainstorm a creative solution that doesn't put U.S. agricultural trade in peril.
We'll be right back with a look at the week ahead. But first, Allie Herring looks at which states stand to receive the most funding in the first round of payments from the Supplemental Disaster Relief Program in this week's Map It Out.
The first round of funding from the Supplemental Disaster Relief Program is beginning to roll out to producers across the country to help cover losses related to natural disasters in recent years. This program will provide just over $16 billion in funding to producers, dispensed to farmers in two stages. Producers from Nebraska, Kansas, and Iowa stand to receive the most aid from this program. Farmers in Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, Illinois, and North Carolina could also receive significant funding based on their eligibility. Stage one of the program will address crop losses that can be measured based on crop insurance indemnities or non-insured disaster assistance program payments. Stage two funding is projected to open in mid-September and will apply to producers with losses for which they did not receive indemnity payments. For AgriPulse, I'm Allie Herring.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Clean Fuels Alliance America is leading the way toward cleaner air, stronger local economies, and reduced dependence on fossil fuels. The industry uses more than 1 billion pounds of soybean oil every month to produce clean fuels. Biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel deliver immediate reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in heavy-duty transportation industries. We're growing better, cleaner fuels for today and tomorrow.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Both the House and Senate are out of session for August recess. They'll return to Washington after Labor Day. Tune in next week and check our website anytime for the latest developments in all things food, farm, and fuel policy. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.